Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Sorry there was no show last week. Big weekend at the Soci household. We moved our daughter, Emma, into college. So there was that. And we christened the weekend, well, before the weekend, with our end of the summer tradition, the Cliff Richard musical summer holiday, Sky Point, the Eunice Stubbs. And the voice you've been hearing for the last few years announcing the show is now a college sophomore at actual college, not Soci Hall. So congratulations, Emma. Anyway, so yeah, no show last week. But we're going to catch up with your titles, so thank you for your patience. We're going to get to the grab-a-pencil portion of the show in a little bit, and we'll dip into the archives a little bit because of a video release that happened earlier this month. But I want to start with a couple of films that I got to watch recently, a couple new titles and a couple older titles, and some news that is happening around the film world here in Indiana. First, mark your calendars, friends. This is happening Thursday, September 2nd at the White Rabbit Cabaret. Yes, the Found Footage Festival is coming to town. This is Joe Pickett of The Onion. And Nick Pruer from Footage Found Fest are going to be there hosting this. So it's their VHS-based comedy show at Indianapolis, Thursday, September 2nd at the White Rabbit Cabaret. Check out the Found Footage Fest. That's going to be some fun stuff. So it's referred to as a tour through the latest and greatest VHS finds, because we all have them, and sometimes they're fun and sometimes they're cringe. So there you go. The Found Footage Festival, Volume 9, Thursday, September 2nd at 8 p.m. at the White Rabbit Cabaret. Don't miss that. I also want to say congratulations and welcome, and finally, to Can-Can to officially open for people in their space. So congratulations for that. Long worth the wait. This weekend, they are showing Crypto Zoo, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Promising Young Woman. And they've rescheduled their outdoor show, Can-Can Outdoor Show, on September 2nd, and the film Yesterday. So that is the current lineup. Coming soon, very soon, you have the Last Picture Show. That is running August. That'll be August 30th and the 31st. September 16th, Outdoors Across the Universe. David Byrne's American Utopia coming September 15th. Electric Jesus coming September 5th. Goodbye Dragon in September 1 and 2nd. And Nomadland, my pick for the best film of last year, August 30th and 31st. And Pig will be coming September 3rd through the 9th. All of that at the Can-Can. Go to cancanindie.com. All right, friends. So a couple films that are opening this weekend, opening in theaters and your favorite streaming service, you have to look for it, is a jumbled thriller called Behemoth. And there's a great opening moment, and I wished it was just that. A jogger running through Los Angeles, and out of nowhere, a very obvious CGI killer ram comes and starts chasing him. Now, if it was a film about killer rams chasing people, you'd have a pretty good monster movie. What this one is a statement on the drug problem in our globe, not just our country, but in our globe. And there is that aspect, the drug that's so powerful that hallucinations are beyond hallucinations. Our jogger guy is obsessed with conspiracy theories. He was also a whistleblower at the chemical company that he used to work at. His daughter is sick, and that's why he blew the whistle. And it goes from there to a kidnapping drama where the guy and his two friends kidnap the mogul, the man who owns the company that he used to work for, and you know, English guy who is cheaper than Mark Strong or Ben Kingsley in this aspect, take him hostage. And as the film goes on, there's the kidnapping aspect, the moguls, the CEO's bodyguard who comes straight out of the Robert Patrick Terminator 2 world. And so we have a hostage drama in a sleazy motel room. We have a pursuit film. And then this, is it real or is it Memorex? And it's all in the drug addict's head. And it's just kind of a jumble of genres with a lot of very, very obvious CG. Of course it is. It's a killer ram on the streets of modern Los Angeles. So I would call this a pizza and beer film if this is your cup of tea. So it just wasn't mine. Also opening this weekend is the dramedy drama. There's some funny moments, but it's probably more drama, called Together. And this is going to be the first of several COVID-based films that's coming out. And I have to give Together credit. This is the first one I've really experienced, and I don't know when I'm going to get burnt out on these. It stars James McAvoy, Sharon Horgan, Samuel Logan, who comes off the bench nicely as the son. It's written by Dennis Kelly, directed by Stephen Daldry, the man who gave us Billy Elliot, The Hours, among others. And it starts March 24th, 2020, and a bickering couple. They're not married. They are a couple with a child. They're stuck indoors, and they hate each other. And early on, it's just the two of them addressing the camera. And kudos to the two leads. They bounce off each other in a great match of verbal tennis. But the fact that they're griping at us about each other, I was concerned that this film was going to just exhaust me. And this is coming from a guy who's currently directing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. So we have a lot of long single takes of them addressing the camera. Then we get into moments with them individually. And there's a few cinematic moments where we do have cutaways and reaction shots. So it's not just, you're not peeking in. You're not a voyeur in this case. And thank God they mix it up, man, because as I said, just them griping for 90 minutes would be exhausting. And it's kind of like the first season of Schitt's Creek. You got to give it some time. You got to be patient with it, at least in the first third, before we finally see some vulnerability about them. So, and this is coming from a guy who has yet to watch Contagion after everything in the last year and a half. I watched Panic in the Streets because it was an old film, but didn't want to watch Contagion. So, and we're gonna get these. We're gonna get a lot of small, intimate, socially distant films, I guess, everybody's shooting a film in their own bubble. These are going to start coming out if they haven't already, and I guess Together is the first one for me. But I really like the performances. And again, it's we use film for escape, and this is one that is addressing the last year and a half. And just be patient with this one. There's some great moments in this with the two actors. They talk about the ups and downs of their relationship, the love that exists behind the hate. There's a fun plot point involving poison mushrooms. And again, James McAvoy and Sharon Horgan, who I had to look up, and she's one of those that ladies. I mean, more known in the UK than she is here. But they get some lovely moments together, and it kind of hits home because there is a moment with one of her parents dying during COVID, and sometimes art imitates life, I'll say that. So, yeah, check out Together, and then get prepared to be burnt out by a lot of COVID-inspired films. New on video this week from Corneth Films, the Ghana film from Ghana called Nakum. A story of a medical student who has to go home after his father is killed in a car wreck, has to deal with his sister, has to deal with his village, has to deal with his uncle, who's become the elder of the village, and the debt that his father has to his uncle, and what needs to be done about that. Beautiful countryside footage. It eventually becomes the will he or won't he stay story. And for 90 minutes, it's a little padded, but it doesn't have a Hollywood ending. So you could do a lot worse out there. So check out Nakum from Cornet Films. Also out on video from IndiePix, the 2007 Canadian documentary Stone Time Touch, about Garin Torosyan, who is an Canadian Armenian who goes back to Armenia for the first time since her childhood. And it's a collage of film and photos and sound, and all she knows about Armenia was what she learned in some books. We have some really cool music from Zuol. It has the feel of something that would be playing on a loop constantly in an art gallery. And so that there's that kind of let yourself get washed over by the music and the sound and the images and the wedding and the elders speaking. And Garin is trying to find out where she belongs. And it's just kind of she went just to go there, to be there, just be, and to see what happens. And that's what it is. And at 70 some odd minutes, it fits perfectly. So check out Stone Time Touch from IndiePix Home Video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, happening over at the Tibbs Drive-In this weekend, on Screen 1, the remake of Candyman, along with Don't Breathe 2. On Screen 2, you have Paw Patrol the movie, and then they want the kids to fall asleep immediately because the second feature is Reminiscence from Hugh Jackman. Screen 3, Free Guy and Jungle Cruise. And Screen 4, The Protégé and Respect. All happening at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In, Friday the 27th, the Super Monster Movie Fest, The Devil Made Us Do It. That'll be followed by the Shelby County Cornstalk on Sunday, September 5th, Pandemonium Weekend, Friday, September 24th. All that's happening at the Skyline Drive-In. At IU Cinema, they are up and back starting Tuesday, August 31st at 7 o'clock. U.S. premiere, new 4K restoration as a part of the City Lights film series from 1944, The Uninvited with Ray Milland. Good haunted house film. I happen to own that Blu-ray on Criterion. Tuesday, September 7th, the 2021 comedy drama Zola. Thursday, September 9th, a special virtual event, Tana, at 7 p.m. from 2015. Join us for a virtual film introduction and film screening with David Stringer, Associate Professor and Director of Undergraduate Studies at the Department of Second Language Studies. That's Thursday, September 9th at 7 p.m. And then Sunday, September 12th, Capturing Lee Miller and the Blood of a Poet at 1 o'clock. So that is happening over at IU Cinema. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Wednesday, September 8th at 7:30 p.m., mark your calendars as part of the midweek music movie series, Rock and Roll High School on the big screen. Way to go, PJ Souls. On Thursday, September 9th at 1:30 p.m., From Here to Eternity, as well as September 10th and 11th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., From Here to Eternity. And then September 15th at 7:30 p.m., as a part of their midweek music movie series, Wednesday, September 15th, Pink Floyd's The Wall. September 17th and 18th, that's Fridays and Saturdays, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Sullivan's Travels. Wednesday, September 22nd at 7:30 p.m. as a part of the midweek music movie series. Yep, Break Into Electric Boogaloo. All of those are happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, before we grab a pencil, I do want to replay my interview with screenwriter Donald Martin, the man who gave us Queen Bees, which is now out on video. It came out on video earlier this month, but it's a good excuse to dip into the archives. Here's my chat with Donald Martin. Enjoy! Well, Donald, congratulations on Queen Bees. What were your thoughts about the film?
Oh, I enjoyed it very much, and I thought it has rolled out very nicely. You know, it's rare these days for a film in the feature film marketplace to start small and build. They used to call it a platforming kind of release. And, you know, that almost seems old-fashioned now when you have major blockbusters, you know, costing over $200 million and having to make $200 million on their opening weekend. Here we have a film, much more modestly budgeted, that started with 500 cinemas, is now at 600 cinemas, and is growing to 700 and 800. And the word of mouth has been absolutely wonderful. You know, I wrote this project with little tidbits of my mother sprinkled within each of the queen bees. So it was a labor of love for me. And I'm just so pleased to see that it's being embraced both by critics and by the public.
Yeah. And is on a side note, you also have one of the more fascinating social media characters going on, and that's James Caan.
Yes, James Caan is a very interesting man and a very good actor.
Well, I believe he was referred to as like everyone's social media grandpa because it's the same type of tweet every time. But that's James being James, apparently.
You know, the interesting thing about this movie is when the producers first approached me, Harrison Powell, he is with Astute Films in Los Angeles, and they reached out to me because I have a longstanding relationship with Dominique Telson, who's the head of development and production of Astute Films.
Mm-hmm.
And we had made a number of projects together when she was at Showtime, and I was writing some movies for Showtime. And Harrison's grandmother, she lost her husband, and she went into a senior citizens community. And to her surprise, she met someone, fell in love, and had what's called an encore marriage. So that inspired him, and he came up with a story that they presented to me and said, you know, what do you think? Come back to us with a pitch. So I regaled them with stories of my mother, which were a little juicier and a little more risque than what his grandmother was going through. But we kind of wove those together, and I never told anyone this, I secretly wrote the lead role with Ellen Burstyn in my head.
Mm.
As a writer, I always try to picture an actor or an actress who's going to inhabit a role, whether they end up playing it or not. It helps me as a writer find the character's voice and to find how they move and how they behave. So it was such a delight, an absolute dream come true for me when Ellen Burstyn read the script and loved it and said yes. And when we were shooting in Atlanta, I went on set for a period of time and I met with her and I told her the secret. I said, you know, I wrote this for you. And she was quite touched because I guess no one had ever written a script for her before.
Oh, wow.
Which I find difficult to believe.
Yeah.
She is one of the best actors of our generation. But she's delightful in person, and as the character of Helen, I absolutely love her.
As this, now you mentioned that, you know, this worked out in this case. Looking at your previous credits, has that ever happened before as far as writing with somebody in mind and they wind up getting in?
Yes, a few times. Or I've been approached by people like Robert Urich when I wrote some of his Spencer for Hire movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I knew that I was writing specifically for him. But when I did the CBS movie Family Sins that Kirstie Alley ended up starring in, a Sunday night movie for CBS back in the early 2000s, I did write it with her specifically in mind. And I had told the producers that, and therefore they went out and made an offer to her, and she embraced the role and inhabited it really, really well. It kind of revived her career, because at the time, if you recall, she was Kirstie Alley, who was overweight,
mm-hmm.
and wasn't really getting hired. But this role called for someone
mm-hmm. was overweight, and it was one of those incredible but true crime stories that you simply cannot make up, and it was one of the highest rated movies in 2004. And while on set, because she enjoyed working so much again, she came up with the idea of her Showtime series, Fat Actress. So it was an interesting sort of path to getting that Showtime series on the air.
And you said earlier that each of the queen bees have an old trait from your mother. Could you share that with us?
Well,
can you clean it up, I guess?
Can I clean it up? Well, yes. Let me just say that Anne Margaret's amorous character is quite reflective of my mother's dating life.
Okay.
And Jane Curtin's rigid card playing rules is very reflective of my mother's card playing rules. And Loretta Devine's sort of easygoing, let's party manner is very much reflective of my mother. And Ellen Burstyn's character, loving to quote people, authors, and being, somewhat, let's say, intransigent on certain issues, very fiercely independent, that's very much my mother.
Okay. Now, I know there's been a lot of comparisons to Mean Girls because of the clique aspect of the film. Were you able to base some of your own high school moments and incorporate those into the film?
No, not necessarily mine, but, I've been around enough high schools and high school students and several of my friends. I'm the one who, I'm a shoulder to cry on, either for the parents or for the kids, for what they're going through in high school. So I took it from there. And, one of the statements we had as a development team going forward when we decided to pursue this as a screenplay and then as a movie was that 80 is the new 18. And, there is some truth to that because I did my research, and before writing the script, I did quite a bit online research, and the number one place for STDs in America is in the retirement community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the invention of Viagra, of course, which has changed all rules and all sorts of things. So because no one is using condoms, and it's because women outnumber the men by ratio 10 to 1. So in Queen Bees, you see Anne Margaret's character, Margot, deal with Christopher Lloyd's character in such a manner in that she has him on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, while other women have him on, Thursdays
right.
and Saturdays and Sundays. But the problem is that, if someone has an STD, if Margot were to have an STD, then, the ladies on Thursday and Saturday would also end up with an STD. So we thought that there was both some interesting drama to be mined there, but we also thought there was some humor to be mined there. Mm-hmm. And it is very adolescent behavior.
You mentioned
in a good way.
No, I know. you mentioned earlier visiting the set. When was the shot, and was this pre or affected by COVID?
Yes, it was shot before COVID.
Okay.
In Atlanta, and the anticipation on all of our parts was that it would be launched in 2020 for Mother's Day. That was our big plan.
Right.
But we all know what happened in 2020. Nothing. Like the world stopped. So we all had to sort of regroup and figure out, how to launch a film like this in a pandemic. And I think waiting until we did was the smartest thing to do because cinemas are opening up again, people are venturing out again, and there is less of a shock to the system, less of a fear that permeates society because of the vaccinations. So I think we timed it very well, just in terms of when to release it. And I think the distribution company and Universal Pictures is really doing a very good job in promoting this.
From a writer, is there a difference in adapting someone's work as far as approaching or outlining compared to an original piece?
Yes, there is. You do want to honor original insights, the person's original idea, which I believe I did, and I worked very closely with Harrison Powell, and he was very much part of the development process, giving me feedback on the outline, on the drafts, I didn't want to create his grandmother because I had never met his grandmother, and she's not, you know, though she's the inspiration for him coming up with the original idea for the story, she is not necessarily the inspiration for Ellen Burstyn's character. I created that character, you know, through a process of research and knowledge and other people I've known. So I try always to do very, very deep character biographies, and I shared them with the producers. I wanted them to know who Helen was in her youth and why she started ballroom dancing with her husband. I wanted them to know why Margot did not have any kids and why she had five husbands. You know, so I really went quite in depth, which I do in all of my work, and I think it helps the actors as well, because it allowed the actors to share some of their own development, because every actor, you know, develops a backstory for a character, and we were able to discuss that on.
It was
something that helped create stronger characters.
And it does more than just have old people be feisty kind of vibe.
That's right.
Low-hanging fruit. I mean, there's
that's
more.
Right. Yeah.
So I know you. I know you're also a former journalist. How are deadlines still with you?
Well, you know, journalism taught me a lot about writing. It taught me about efficiency of words. It taught me how to get to the point clearly and concisely when telling a story. We call it a log line in a movie. You know, you call it the lead in a newspaper story. But it's how to entice and seduce an audience. So that was one thing that journalism was a gift for me as a screenwriter. Mm-hmm. In terms of deadlines, yes, I had to deliver something every day by 6 p.m. and it had to be brilliant. So, you know, I give my, even when I'm writing something speculatively on my own, I give myself deadlines. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps, because if you don't, you could just sort of keep on developing and keep on developing. Now, it doesn't mean that you stop developing once you meet a deadline, but once you meet a deadline, you then have to show it to people and get feedback, which is a very important part of the process of developing a script.
Yes. And was there overlap time from your journalism years to your screenwriting years?
No, I'll tell you what happened, and this is a long time ago, in 1988. I was writing for the Globe and Mail newspaper in Toronto, mm-hmm. and I had always wanted to be a screenwriter, but I didn't know what door to open, if you will. I thought that there was some magic door, and I didn't know where that door was. So I had a friend who was a cinematographer, and he and I talked about, you know, we're going to form a production company, we're going to make movies, we're going to do this. He wanted to be a director, I wanted to be a screenwriter. And every weekend we would talk about it, but we wouldn't necessarily do anything about it. And then he got liver cancer and he died. The Wednesday morning, I saw him in the hospital, and he grabbed me by the shoulders and said, "Shut up and write. Stop talking about writing and go and write." So I came home that Friday, and you don't argue with people when they're dying on their deathbed. You just go, "Of course." Mm-hmm. So I got home that Friday night, and I had never written a screenplay in my life. I started writing Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday, Sunday night. At 2 a.m. Monday morning, I had completed my first screenplay. And ironically, I sold it that Monday to a producer-director, female producer-director in Toronto that I had written about twice for the newspaper. And I knew that she was a very adamant, feminist, loving women's stories, wanting to sort of push the envelope on women's stories. And what I had written was, it turned out to be, the very first story about AIDS and HIV written from the point of view of a woman. And she was able to have that movie financed within 2 weeks. And within 6 months, the movie was having its world premiere at the Monte Carlo Television Festival, and Prince Albert gave me the Red Cross Award. And then the World Health Organization invited the film to open the 5th International AIDS Conference, because unbeknownst to any of us, the scientific community was looking at women as the next wave in the story of HIV and AIDS. And so this movie called No Blame, starring Helen Shaver, mm-hmm. arrived at the right time. And it changed my entire life and career, because I was offered a 5-picture deal by ABC Pictures, and I stopped writing for the newspaper.
What is the one coverage in the newspaper business? What was the one piece of coverage you liked doing the least?
Well, when they made me go and review plays or films, I initially in the entertainment department, but then I was moved into the entertainment department, and I had to go and be a critic. And as someone who wanted to be creating my own work, mm-hmm. I really didn't want to criticize other people's work. So that was the most challenging part for me.
Okay. Coming back to the present, how was your writing during COVID, during the lockdown?
Well, I was fortunate in the sense that I had a number of projects that had begun prior to the lockdown and to the pandemic. So I simply stayed in my home, which is where I spent 100% of my life anyhow, like most writers, a cave. So I just spent 100% of my time living in a cave, and I just kept on working and revising and rewriting and fine-tuning those scripts. The irony is that here we are in 2021, and I have what may be 5 films being released in 2021.
I have your IMDb page up, actually. I was going to ask you about these to see if these were true or not. So
let me
start. The disappearance of Mrs. Wu is completed. Is that correct?
It is completed, and it's a small independent film. It's having its world premiere at Gina Davis's Bentonville Film Festival in August. And that will be officially announced soon, so you're the first to hear it.
Thank you.
That was shot just prior to the pandemic, and it's something I did with Anna Chi. Anna Chi and I together, we did a movie for HBO called Dim Sum Funeral, mm-hmm. and we've done some projects together throughout the years for Miramax and the Weinstein Company. And she directed this. We wrote it together. And I'm very proud of it. It's a beautiful, beautiful film, independently financed. And then there's Queen Bees, of course.
Yep.
And then on the same weekend that Queen Bees came out, my Lifetime movie, Secrets of a Gold Digger Killer, came out on Sunday with Julie Benz. And I did not come up with the title, but here's the irony. I I had written that script in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And during the pandemic, every broadcaster was looking for, what do we have that's available,
yep,
that's already been developed? Like, what can we go, you know, and make? So they made that movie in December of 2020 in British Columbia and Texas. And it's pretty the magic of cinema is amazing, the magic of television, because you would never know where it was shot in Victoria, British Columbia. And it's done very well in the ratings. And so that was sort of a double whammy that weekend. And then I have a Netflix movie starring Alyssa Milano that is now in post-production. It's called Deadly Desire.
Yep, that's on
here. It's based on the Nora Roberts novel, Brazen Virtue, which I don't even know what Brazen Virtue really means. But that novel came out in the late 1980s, and it's a murder mystery taking place in the world of telephone sex. So when Netflix approached me, you know, we obviously wanted to find a more contemporary world, mm-hmm, to have the story unfold. And so now it takes place in the world of online S&M.
Okay.
And Alyssa Milano is fantastic in the lead. She's a wonderful actress. And I'm very excited about that. And currently, this is not listed on my IMDb, but I'm currently writing a Hanukkah movie for Hallmark Channel, which would, I believe, be the very, very first 100% Hanukkah movie for a U.S. network. Because often, if you pay attention, you know, many of these Christmas stories have a little bit of Hanukkah woven in there, and a little bit of Hanukkah woven in,
yep,
there. This is like Hanukkah all the way.
That's a good title.
So, yeah, so it's, and so I'm currently writing it. I mean, I'm going to get a green light because it's got, you know, a production date all set up. And so that would be released on Hallmark in December. So that would make the fifth movie of 2021.
Okay. There's two other titles I see. One is called Implant.
Right. Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And the other?
That is a project. Yeah. That is a project that I've developed with for two female producers who are both deaf. And we wanted to create a project that featured central characters who were deaf, and that was not seen as an adversity, but it was seen as an asset and as a strength.
Okay.
So that project is still in development and is in the financing stages, and I don't know what else is on IMDb.
Bear Season.
Oh, Bear Season, of course. Bear Season is written. And J. Todd Harris, who is a wonderful producer, he was one of the producers on the trial of Chicago 7. He is one of the executive producers of 12 Mighty Orphans, which is now, mm-hmm, out in cinemas, competing with Queen Bees. and he also did The Kids Are All Right, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So he is producing this adaptation of a novel called Bear Season, and we've attached Luke Evans, Jacob Tremblay, and Olga Kurylenko.
Mm.
And the hope is to shoot this film in the spring/summer of 2022. We had hoped to be shooting it in the summer of 2021, but, you know,
right,
the pandemic and all the protocols all over the world and people's schedules and you know, some actors simply refusing to leave their home countries to go to another country to shoot a movie. So we've tabled that. J. Todd Harris is one of the finest producers in Los Angeles, and he has such good taste. And I'm an executive producer on that project as well as the writer. I optioned the book, and I wrote the script on spec because I loved it so much. And you know, it's a story of a boy, an 11-year-old boy, his inebriated uncle, and a bear that may or may not exist, and the need to believe in something. That's really what it's about. And if you loved Cinema Paradiso, if you loved My Life as a Dog, it's that kind of movie.
Okay.
And it's a real passion project for me. And the bear is actually real. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Bojack, the soldier bear, but this is a novel that weaves in an actual bear who was a corporal in the Polish Freedom Army in World War II.
Okay.
And that bear existed until 1963 at the Edinburgh Zoo. He smoked, he drank beer, he smoked and ate lit cigarettes, he wrestled, and he participated in a campaign against the Nazis in Italy in World War II and carried the missiles, bombs to put in cannons. And he helped win the war in Italy against the Nazis. This is all true. I'm not making any of this up.
Okay. Wow. I was thinking, have you received resumes and headshots from the bear from the David Mamet film The Edge?
Well, you know, because we are going to spend most of the movie not knowing if this inebriated uncle who lies all the time is telling the truth or not, but both he and his nephew like to draw. We are going to use pencil sketch animation whenever we see, quote, flashbacks of the bear in World War II. And therefore, it allows us to doubt the existence of the bear, because even the boy doubts the existence of the bear. And it's only until they reach a critical point in the story that the boy discovers the bear really does exist, and that his uncle is the man who took care of the bear from cubhood on and fought next to him in World War II and is the one who had to place him in the Edinburgh Zoo, and it made a hole in his heart. So it's kind of a road trip. This 11-year-old boy is going to take his uncle without passports across an ocean into Liverpool and all the way up to Edinburgh so that he can be reunited with his soulmate, the bear.
And the bear will want the and credit.
So we will only see the bear at the very, very end of the movie when they're at the Edinburgh Zoo.
Very good. So you mentioned earlier, well, hey, that's showbiz. You mentioned earlier the fact that you had one of your films on one of your scripts on TV and one in the theaters. What is the most number of times the most number of films have been on television at the same time?
Well, I would say because I've written a lot of Hallmark Christmas movies, maybe like 10 of them, they all seem to air in that countdown to Christmas that Hallmark does. So if you want to have a little bit of a Donald Martin festival, you just have to look the Hallmark schedule on my IMDb page, and you can tick them all off, and you can watch them.
Have you ever had two in a row on when they do those marathons?
Three?
Okay.
Operation Christmas, Christmas Homecoming, and Christmas Town.
Well, then you need a TCM like desk to talk and intro these. Go ahead.
No, I just loved writing, you know, and I mean I've been doing this nonstop, and I've been so lucky and blessed since 1988 when I did that first movie. Since then, I've never not been under contract. So I'm always working on something for someone. Plus, I'm always creating my own material.
Excellent.
Like Bear Season, you know, something that I'm always looking for new material and creating stuff on my own. So, and I intend to continue doing this until I'm older than Ellen Burstyn.
Very good.
And I'm not anywhere near there.
Good, good. Hey, when you're writing, are you able to watch a film that's in the same genre or same subject matter, or is that distracting?
No, it's not distracting. I can watch something that's in the same wheelhouse, and I can learn from it. You know, sometimes I intentionally watch films that are in the same wheelhouse because I want to see, all right, what did they do that worked, mm-hmm. and what did they do that didn't work, in my estimation. So I find it helpful. It's part of my research.
Okay. I want to thank you again for your time. Of course, Queen Bees and Secrets of a Gold Digger Killer. You know, certain channels, they got to have the titles that pull you. So, and yes. That has that. So,
yes, it does.
It's kind of
It's part of Lifetime's Secrets of Summer series. They just brought a bunch of movies that they've made together, and they've added the word secrets to them all. So it's Secrets of Summer. It's a package.
Very good. Hey, but wrap things up. I know they both passed away recently, but do you have stories about Olympia Dukakis or Cloris Leachman?
Oh, yes. I did a movie many, many, many years ago in 1995 with both of them starring in it called Never Too Late.
Genie-nominated Never Too Late.
Yes, yes, and for nominated for Writers Guild of Canada Award as well. And Olympia Dukakis was an absolute genteel, very proper woman. I mean, she just approached everything with such elegance, and of course she had the mouth of a trucker, but she had also sort of this way about her that was just so poised and elegant. And then you had Cloris Leachman, who was playing at that time her first lesbian role. She played a lesbian in a wheelchair. And she, I guess as part of her research, on set, she decided to grope all the female crew and to flash her breasts at everyone. But that was part of her sort of crazy approach to getting into character. And I have to say, if anyone is able to watch that film, she steals every scene. She's brilliant. Cloris Leachman. I mean, Olympia is a goddess. I love her. But I mean, Cloris was phenomenal in that movie.
Excellent. Well, the film is called Queen Bees. It is written by Donald Martin, who also wrote Secrets of a Gold Digger Killer. Donald, I guess I want to ask, what films have you watched recently? And old, new, or doesn't matter?
I just watched Kevin Hart's Fatherhood. And I was really pleasantly surprised by how wonderful he is and how well constructed the story was. You know, I mean, he does fairly broad comedy, and so I didn't know what to expect, but I have to say it's a beautiful movie. And it was very special. I watched it on Father's Day.
Oh, perfect. So, all right, well, Donald, I really, really appreciate your time. Congratulations with the projects, and here's to more projects in the future.
Thank you.
That's Donald Martin, the writer of Queen Bees, which is now out on home video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching over the last week. Hopefully you've been watching some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we start on Twitter with Andrea, who says Val Kilmer's documentary was so, so good. Mr. Game and Shout writes, finally watched Evangelion 3.0 plus 1.0, the fourth and final film in the Hideki Anno rebuild of Evangelion tetralogy. Man, I'm butchering it today. Once it hit Amazon Prime Video, 6 years after the previous film, 12 years after the first film, hell of a wait. Lou Harry writes, Lilium, the Fritz Lang version, Oklahoma, Can-Can, Candyman, Brigadoon, and the Ides of March. Thank you, Lou. Always good to see you. Laura also chimes in, agree with the Val Kilmer documentary. Really, really good. Also, I stumbled upon This Must Be the Place, starring Sean Penn on Netflix. Totally blew me away. Deserves a much bigger audience. Bill writes, A Man Called Ove. I remember that film. Swedish film. A crabby retiree goes from being suicidal to being adopted by an immigrant family that moves in across the street. Very heartwarming, funny, and sometimes sad. Absolutely, Bill. I'm glad you got to check that one out. I'm glad that's one I wish would get a bigger audience. So that is happening over on Twitter. Thank you, Twitter folks. All right. We go to Facebook. We start with Melissa, who writes Candyman and Kiss the Girls. God, there's a double feature. Tony writes Jungle Cruise. Jenny writes Free Guy, so good. And Reminisce, also very good. Okay, Chris Lloyd of the Film Yap. So he was bummed out that I didn't ask for your films last week. I told him to post it this week. In parentheses, cracks knuckles. Midnight Run, The Deer Hunter, Searching for Mr. Rugoff, Crypto Zoo, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, The Night House, Kringle Time, Rurouni Kenshin, The Beginning, A Place in the Sun, We Shall Rise, Candyman, Together, Flag Day, and X-Men Origins Wolverine. Thank you, Chris. And remember, check out the Film Yap, Midwest Film Journal, and Medium Cool. And anything Richard Probst is up to, anything Lou Harry is up to. All right, Jamie writes City Slickers and Look Who's Talking. Tom writes Tenet, Christopher Nolan's Mindbender. He calls it a new Mindbender. It's been on for a year. On HBO, like Inception, you really have to focus on the dialogue to wrap your mind around the plot. Intriguing. Thank you, Tom. Don writes Lady in the Van and St. Vincent. Don, my Mrs. Sosie and I got to see the stage version of Lady in a Van in London with Maggie Smith. So glad you got to check that out. Scott writes the movie 222, not Room 222. Hi, Karen Valentine. Megan writes The Sleepover and A Wrinkle in Time. Wayne writes The Suicide Squad, Epic Wonderfulness, and Free Guy, probably Ryan Reynolds' best role. Tracy Foreigner, Labyrinth, Spiderwick Chronicles, Scoob, lots of Pixar shorts, and Lego Ninjago. My daughter quotes Labyrinth like her dad quotes Jaws. Tracy, yeah, they do that. They do that. Tracy also writes, got one of the boys to watch it by telling him this one, that's one of the guys who sings Under Pressure. Wow. Call me when you show him The Hunger or Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. Carrie writes Suicide Squad and Gods of Egypt. Judy writes Burn After Reading. Kevin writes Inside Llewyn Davis and Hail Caesar. Michael writes Fantasy Island the Movie, Reminiscence, The Manchurian, and Sweet Girl. Cassie writes The Owl and the Pussycat. Sean writes Manglehorn and the Mouse That Roared. Jed wrote, watch Cat on a Hot Tin Roof for the first time. Really enjoyed it. Was great seeing local legend Burl Ives in it. Yeah, he was Big Daddy. Austin Glidden, Medium Cool Podcast. Check it out. Friday the 13th, parts 2 and 3. Dracula, doesn't say which one. Edward Scissorhands, The World's End, and The Most Recent Candyman. Joe also writes The Most Recent Candyman. Sam writes, I thought it was effing awesome. Cool. I love when my fellow IFJA members, bicker at each other on Facebook, on my Facebook. JR writes Alien. Stephanie writes Stagecoach. Which version of Stagecoach? David writes Watchmen, the movie, and Dr. Strangelove. Michael writes Summer of Soul, utterly fantastic story on many levels. Glad you got to see that, Michael. Craig writes Magic in the Moonlight and then said started the Fantastics but gave up. Try to remember, Craig. Melissa writes, oh, I forgot. Last week I watched Together as well. Thank you. Oh, Together with Ed Helms, not the film I just talked about. So, okay. Mark writes Contact and Eyes Wide Shut. Jen writes Free Guy, Jungle Cruise, and the Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby. Mike writes, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and The Grapes of Wrath. Kim writes, Arsenic and Old Lace. Dustin writes, Cabin in the Sky, Act One, The Omen, the original, The Final Cut of Blade Runner, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, The Fighter, Charlene, Inception, Life of Pi, and Blade Runner 2049. Pamela writes, Annette and Respect. Man, there's a double feature. Sean writes, If Beale Street Could Talk. Howell writes, The Rolling Stones, Sweet Summer of Fun in honor of Charlie Watts. Yeah, big salute to Charlie, the human metronome. And you'll be hearing the blues, according to the Rolling Stones, with Charlie Watts on the drums on this weekend's Blues House Party, Saturdays at 7 o'clock. Beverly writes, Jim Jones, the Guyana tragedy. Yes, Richmond's own Jim Jones. Eric writes, First for me, A Walk Among the Tombstones, The Handmaiden, The Little Things, Testament of Youth, Judas and the Black Messiah, and the original miniseries Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. The rewatches, Agnes of God and Paper Moon. Side tangent for a moment. I want to thank my buddy Laura Jansen for introducing me to a really cool podcast called You Must Remember This. And it's about some of the backstories of certain aspects of Hollywood. And I finished a 10-part series about Polly Platt, who was involved with Peter Bogdanovich, married to Peter Bogdanovich, and, well, got dumped by Peter Bogdanovich. So... or vice versa. Sorry. But check it out. It's a really cool series, and I'm actually going back to its original run as far as I've seen, heard episodes about Madonna, Isabella Rossellini, and Humphrey Bogart. But yeah, the 10-part one on Polly Platt is really solid. Back to the list. Laura writes, Rewatch The Truman Show with my 16-year-old daughter. So fun to watch it again after all these years. Cue the sun. Molly writes, The Final Member, The Suicide Squad, and The Problem with Apu. Ronald writes, It's been oldies week at my house. Since last Saturday, The American President, Open Range, The Sting, Cool Hand Luke, and last night, Red River. Very good. Donald writes, The 1974 Three Musketeers, How to Marry a Millionaire, Song of the Thin Man, The Barclays of Broadway, Only Angels Have Wings, 1952's Carrie, not to be confused with the 70s Carrie, The Birdcage, Queen Bee's, Respect, and The Four Musketeers, Yankee Doodle Dandy, Reminiscence, Gloria. I'm assuming that's John Cassavetes, one with Jenna Rollins, and not the one with Sharon Stone. I'm just saying. Law of Desire, The Secret of Nim, and 1940's Wuthering Heights. Thank you, Daniel. Cassandra writes, McFarlane, USA, such a good film. Jay writes, We went and saw Free Guy. It was hilarious. I'm a fan of the goofy humor through, though. Ryan Reynolds was great. Millicent writes, Night and Day, escaping into an action-adventure film was fun. Jeff writes, Boss Level, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and The Vault. Joshua writes, The Hunt, Misha and the Wolves, Kong Skull Island, Untold, Deal with the Devil, Minority Report, Shock and Awe, The Interpreter, The Last Boy Scout, Green Zone, Count Me In, Sky Point to Charlie Watts, and The Score. Thank you, Joshua. Chris writes, My Own Private Idaho and Mulholland Drive. Julia Ricci writes, Late Spring, GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and The Gazebo, with Sam Watermeyer chiming in. Sad you didn't like GoldenEye, but happy you dug Tomorrow Never Dies. I like that one a lot as well. Brosnan and Neo are great together. Yes, they are. The concept was fun, and it has that killer Sheryl Crow song. Joe writes, 2 weeks worth... he's giving me 2 weeks worth of his list. Field of Dreams, Road to Perdition, Season 2 of Ted Lasso, Schmigagoon, Traitors, Cast a Giant Shadow, Ron, and Beckett. Doug writes, Pennies from Heaven, Going Places, The 1948 A Star is Born, Jupiter's Darling, It Happened at the World's Fair. God, you're watching Elvis movies? That's the one with Kurt Russell, kicking him in the shins. The Three Stooges Meet Hercules. Man, Three Stooges movies in the 1960s. That's rough. Satchmo, The Life of Louis Armstrong. That's the American Masters. Thank you. Pray Away and Summer of Soul. Thank you, Doug. Linda writes Pearl Harbor and Fury. Skyla writes The Departed. Mary writes North by Northwest, The Exorcist, and Christine. Missy writes Janice. Joan writes Groundhog's Day and The Birdcage. Christopher writes The Big Boss and Suicide Squad. Kurt writes Out of Africa and Under the Tuscan Sun. In both cases, I got lots of respects from the audience that they weren't what they remembered or that they weren't what they thought would be based on the book, but both had high attendance. Thank you, Kurt. He does screenings at a senior facility. So thanks, Kurt. And drinks with Dee Dee Servino. Miss you guys. Hope you're doing well. Mario writes Network. Britt writes Hellboy, Pitch Perfect 3, Blade and Blade 2, Godzilla vs. Kong, and Harry Potter's and the there's two of them. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets and the Sorcerer's Stone. Thank you, Britt. Alan writes Black Snake Moan. Hi, Christina Ricci. Alex writes Raising Arizona. Holling writes, Free Guy was surprisingly good and clever. Jaden gave it a stamp of approval, which is typically hard to get from him. Understood. John writes, In the Heights. Don writes, Dr. Strangelove and Being There. Nick writes, Braguino, directed by Clement Cotier. I'm butchering these, man. In the Serbian forest, away from civilization, a feud is opposing two families whose houses are separated by a river. In the middle of the river stands an island where the kids of the two families are meeting on their own. Matt writes, a ridiculous amount of kung fu. There is quite a collection from the Ip Man series on Netflix. The pair of Kenshin films are excellent as well. John writes The Emperor's New Groove. Jeff writes Adaptation and The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Joey writes Hitman 4, Jungle Cruise, Infinite, Rurouni Kenshin, The Beginning and Final, and Steam Boy. Gary writes The Usual Suspects, Aina and Uzumaki. Michelle writes Taken and Julie and Julia. Robert Muggy, you guys are so polite. It's great when sorry, Matthew, totally forgot Thursday was your movie day. So over the past 2 weeks, I've watched the following. Night of the Iguana, Buchanan Rides Alone, The White Sheik, Macau, Coda, Ride Lonesome, Nothing Sacred, Comanche Station, No Man of Her Own, The Oxbow Incident, Annette, To the Ends of the Earth, 12 Angry Men, Siren of the Tropics, La Revue de la Revues, Princess Tam Tam, and Zuzu. Robert, no need to apologize, my friend. I just love the fact that, y'all are invested in this, and it's great. And finally, Andrew writes, Sweet Baby, the new Jason Momoa movie on Netflix. Wow, what a thriller. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week, the last 2 weeks. So, again, thank you for your patience. Sorry we didn't do it last week, but my daughter's in college, at college. That's very cool. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. We are going to end this week's show with a musical tribute to Sonny Chiba. He passed away last week. Yes, man, if you don't have any Sonny Chiba in your film collection, please do something about that. American audiences know him because he is the plot point at the beginning of True Romance. He, of course, is the sword master in Kill Bill, who makes the sword for Uma Thurman. But, man, just a slew of films from the 70s, especially the 1970s, that he's famous for, of course, most notably The Street Fighter, which is the first film to receive an X rating for violence. But, man, he's got between the 60s and 70s material. Go to IMDb and just start jotting down notes and go look for his stuff, man. It's if you like martial art films, if you want a grittier, dirtier version of Bruce Lee, man, Chiba is right there for you. So we're going to play the theme song from The Street Fighter as we finish this week. Thank you for listening. Hope you get to watch some new films, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we'll try this again next week. Take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!